We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the show. The Pelicans, since our last podcast, have finished off their 10-game win streak, and everybody came roaring down to the arena to watch them continue their win streak, and the Pelicans promptly lost four of their next six games and don't have a win streak anymore. But it doesn't matter. 4-4 over the last 2 weeks. That's not really good enough to hold your position in the Western Conference as far as playoffs go. But I'm not upset by that record during that stretch of schedule. How do you feel about that result?
They survived. I think you could argue maybe they would have stolen and won one more game if AD didn't get hurt. Of course, you have a 10-game win streak. You have a game at home where everybody's going to be pumped. And, of course, AD's going to get hurt the game before that. But I'll take it. I mean, they're, what, 12-4 over their last 16? I definitely would have taken that after those brutal losses. I mean, this team was reeling. They had those brutal losses to Minnesota, Utah, and Philly back to back to back. They were sitting at 28-26, 12-4 since then. I'll definitely take that.
Yeah, it's been very nice. Of course, in the Western Conference, since the teams there don't seem to want to lose very often unless they're named Denver, the Pelicans have fallen to eighth. Are they still in eighth as of this moment? I guess there's some games going on. So
it'd be six right now if it ended right now, but it's all so nebula. I mean, it really doesn't matter. But, yeah, technically they'd be six because they're tied with San Antonio and they have the tiebreaker, and then Minnesota has one more loss. So sitting at six right now.
Yeah. And so here's the big question. Before we even talk about the last eight games that we just watched, gut feeling right now, Pelicans, do they make the playoffs?
I think they do, in large part because I think Denver and the Clippers miss it. I don't think that the Pelicans have to do, like, if they go 500 the rest of the way, they make the playoffs and perhaps comfortably. So, yeah, I think they make the playoffs. Now we're talking about 5, 6, 7, or 8 seed, barring Anthony Davis misses 10 games with an injury.
And I just so we put it out there.
Yeah, I just wanted to knock on wood after saying that.
Gotcha. So, like, 46-36 is the record you just stated if they go 500 the rest of the way. I believe most predictions, you know, on a, like, not high end or low end,
we're about 46-36. So maybe a little bit higher, unless, of course, national media, of course, wanted to give them 38 wins. But we're not national media, and we're cool. So 46-36, based on what you knew at the beginning of the season, 46-36, and if you knew that Cousins wasn't going to play the full season, is that a victory? Is that a loss? Is that just what we should expect watching the New Orleans Pelicans?
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it that way. I guess I would have taken it, but to me, this has always been a building season towards something bigger and better. Like, I would take less wins, but more time and more games with Davis and Cousins together. I would take less wins if now I didn't have to worry if Boogie's going to come back 80 or 90% versus 100 long term. So, yeah, I mean, I guess they'll end this season with probably somewhere between 46, 48 wins. We'll call it a victory. They'll lose in the first round, and we'll be excited about next year. But we still got to remember that this team, as far as its ceiling, is all about Davis and Cousins, and to a smaller extent, Drew, and those guys all playing together and playing off each other and, you know, making each other better. So whatever happens, there will still be this hole that's like, you know, that could never be filled just because we haven't seen a ton of AD and Cousins together, and we honestly don't know what percentage he's going to come back at. So victory in some ways, but, you know, disappointing for that one large reason.
Yep. Two things to get to also before I have some questions about the games. First one, Frank Jackson just had another surgery. It was announced today. He's not going to play this season at all. Should we be upset? Should we just shrug? Like, what's your take?
No, I mean, they're obviously just prepping him to win Rookie of the Year next year, and they didn't want him to come back and play a game or two and ruin his eligibility. No, it sounds like just a cleanup procedure, and it's obvious that he wasn't going to play this year anyway, so get him completely right so he could have a good off season, hopefully start in summer league. But yeah, it's a little disappointing just because you would like to know, you know, you would have liked to seen him a little bit, and he probably could have gotten some playing time, even though that wasn't the plan going in. But with some of the injuries the team had, you'd like to think he'd be able to get some playing time or at least some garbage minutes, and it would be good to know if the team should expect anything from him next year, or if essentially he's just going to be an end of bench or even G League guard again. So a little disappointing. The one thing that's, you know, kind of makes it a little better, even though this is stupid, is you can't really go down the second round of that draft from last year and find a ton of guys that would have helped. Like, there was no Malcolm Brogdon taken at the beginning of the second round this year. They're, you know, Semi Ojeleye's done a little bit. You know, some of the Clippers guards have been solid, you know, ninth or tenth men. But, you know, it's just, it's good that there wasn't like a Malcolm Brogdon taken four picks later, because that would have hurt even more.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly never even saw Frank play in college, so it's not like I'm missing the guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it would be nice. I mean, like, the way that we're getting excited about Diallo now, or maybe not even excited, but he's helping out a little bit. You saw the flash. Like, it would be nice to have something there. Like, you know, Josh Hart went one pick earlier. If you could even be getting what Josh Hart gave you. But like I said, it's good because there's nobody, I mean, really behind them that's really been doing anything that you're just sitting there hating yourself because you didn't grab them with that pick. So you hope that Frank Jackson comes back. He wasn't going to play this year anyway. Learned a little bit of how to be a professional on the road, watch guys in practice, working with Rondo, et cetera. And then he could come back next year, maybe be a fifth guard, and occasionally flash the potential that Diallo is showing this year.
Yeah. Other bit of news this week, Solomon Hill actually made it back to the court. He played several minutes that didn't really seem to be out there for most of those minutes. So what did you – like, my take of Solomon Hill was he did some stuff and he was not that impactful, and I shouldn't be surprised by that. What was your take?
I've, like – he looked like me when I'm in a pickup game with, like, four guys that are 1,000 times better than me. I just kind of want to get out of the way and hopefully not mess up when they pass the ball to me. He was more than happy just being on the weak side of the offense and standing there and not really touching the ball. Like, you could just tell he did not have much confidence in himself at all. Defensively, you know, some lateral agility, but I mean, he's a ways away from making an impact. Like, he's not even the bad version of himself yet, and I don't know. I don't think the team should be expecting anything. Like, just his burst, his movement. Like, it's hard for me to believe that he could give you more than what Liggins could give you right now. I just don't see it. I think he's got to get in games, but like look at the stretch the Pelicans are in right now. They just played yesterday, then they got three games in 3 days tomorrow, or starting tomorrow, and then they travel to Houston. Like, they're not going to have any practices or scrimmages.
Yeah.
So, like, what good is a walkthrough going to do for him? Like, he needs to get up and down, physical scrimmages, play, you know, test it out there. But they're not going to be doing that at this point in the season. So his only run is going to be coming in games against the best players in the world who have been doing this for the last couple months. I don't see how he's going to get back into the flow at this point in the season.
Yeah.
Like, what would plan for him be? Like, would you have him go playing with college kid? Like, what would you do with him right now?
If I could do anything at all?
Yeah.
I would send him down to a D-League team and let him get some run there. But we don't have a D-League team to send him down to, unless we want to send him to somebody else's team, and that's not really helping us. Like, here's the thing about it, too, is, like, he's not... We act like he's just coming back to his team, so he should be okay, but I'll be... Like, I don't think... I'm not trying to be hyperbolic at all about this. This is the most complete offensive overhaul I have ever seen from one season to a next for a team I follow that didn't also have major turnover in players and major turnover in the coaching staff. Like, it is a very different offense this year than what he was involved in last year. So it's not going to be easy for him, but first you just got to get him physically right even before you start figuring out how to fit him into the offense. And he's got to get in shape, and he's got to get some run and just get used to playing out there. So if I could, I'd send him down to a D-League and let him play, like, a couple weeks there.
Yeah, that would likely make a lot of sense. So, I don't know what to expect. I basically see this as, prep for, honestly, his off season and heading into next year. I just really don't expect him to give the team much. Couple minutes here to buy some time. He could, maybe you get some big leads against somebody like Dallas, and he could play full speed some garbage minutes, and he could take some shots that don't matter. Like, that's probably the best case scenario, is that in games that you win, you blow teams out. In games that you lose, you get blown out. That Houston game coming up, I would honestly sit my starters. Solomon Hill, if he's up for it, could get 20 to 30 minutes in that game and use that as an extended scrimmage of sorts. So, I just think it's going to be tough. Like, I think it's going to be tough for him to even be as good as DeAndre Liggins at any point this year.
That's rough, because I'm not a fan of Liggins.
Well, no, but Liggins is bouncy, he's active, he's in shape, he's been playing all this. Like, they're probably pretty close defensively. Obviously, Hill's a little bigger when they're both in shape but and Hill's obviously the more skilled offensive player, but like Liggins is in shape and he's confident and he could run all day and all night and he's been playing like Hill is like I would encourage people if they have that game on tape or some go watch it again. He just kind of jogs up court, not much lateral movement, and then he just stands and it's like there's a thought bubble above his head that's constantly like, please don't give me the ball. Please don't give me the ball. And I just, like, how does he get over that with no scrimmages, no real playing time? He's going to be on the court with AD and Drew, and he's not going to want to take the ball or shots away from them. Like, I think it's going to be a struggle unless they could get him into some minutes where they're either blowing out teams or getting blown out.
Yeah. All right.
Bring up the Walter Lemon for Larry Drew swap. That wasn't big enough for you to talk about?
No, but Drew did get some minutes in that Boston game. Like they're just so it feels like they're clearly throwing these guys out there just to try to get some rest because they know how brutal the next, you know, 3 days are going to be. Actually, it's even longer than that. But Lemon, Drew, so, you know, Drew should be able to pass a little bit better and Lemon could drive and miss a little bit better. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Were you sad to see Lemon go back?
No. I'm just curious. Like, to me, Drew's looked bad in both appearances, and I just wonder what they're going to do now with the 10-day slots. Like, I don't know if they really need him. I don't know why, if it's just 4 minutes, why Charles Cook can't get those minutes. And if they'll just stop getting these 10-day guys now that Hill's back and there's probably not going to be any minutes in the rotation. But, yeah, I loved how Larry Drew in that blowout against Boston. He was just determined to get shots up in the fourth quarter, so good for him.
Yeah. So, all right, so since our last podcast, there's been 8 games. What I want to do is I want you to pick the game that you were most happy about and the game that you were most disgusted about, and we'll talk about those two games. How's that sound? So just so everybody knows, the games under consideration start with the win in Los Angeles at the Clippers, then a win at Sacramento, came home, lost to Washington and Utah, and then we took the game versus Charlotte. We went away to San Antonio, lost there, lost to Houston, and beat the remains of a Boston team destroyed by injury. On Sunday. So which of those teams, which two games you want to pick there?
The one I was happiest about, curiously, was a loss against the Spurs. The Spurs do this right around March every year where they're just like, okay, time to get ready for the playoffs. We're going to turn the defense up another notch and let's get going. And I hadn't seen it yet this year. Then I watched them the game before against Orlando, and I just went, uh-oh. And then the same happened in the first half of this Pelicans game. Like, they were flying around. They were on a string. They were playing that Spurs playoff defense. Every time we went in the lane, they all converged. They were blocking shots, stripping the ball from, like, I was like, okay, the Spurs have stopped messing around. They see that the schedule is about to get hard, and they've stepped up the defense to their elite level. And I thought that game, like, I would have bet any amount of money that game was going to be a blowout. And then in the second quarter, the Pelicans chip away. In the third quarter, they really ratchet up the defense, and they stayed in that game, and they had opportunities. You know, I know there were some questionable calls by the refs, and we could get on that. I thought Drew took some questionable shots down the stretch, and again, Mirotić was a no-show in a game when they needed him. But I was just so impressed after that game. Like, I think the last couple of years, that's the game that the Pelicans just get blown out, and they stayed right there with them and had a chance to win. So that was that was the game that I was most impressed by, and I left going, okay, they're not going to just roll over. Those Houston games will be tough to win, but every other game, they have a legit shot because they went into San Antonio as San Antonio is starting to go streaking. I feel like they will now, and they had a chance to win that game. So that was the one that made me happiest.
So give me your general thoughts on this, because a lot of really good teams generally have like a baseline. They have a certain amount of points in offense and defensive prowess that their stars are giving them. And then there is X factors. There's 2-3 X factors on those really good teams that if you get any one or having an amazing game or two having pretty good games, you're going to win every like almost all the time. And which is why people always have the playoff, you know, role players that they always love and who get wildly overpaid by their next team if they're free agents the next year because they were the spotlight. You expected the 90 points from the stars, but that guy went for 18 in three straight games or two straight games, and wow, maybe he can do more. And then he goes wherever he's going, and he's what he always was. It feels a little bit like we're approaching that point, that we don't have the three guys who could do that. But it does feel like if you get a good game from Ian Clark or a good game from Etuan Moore or a good game from Mirotić, and then you're right there in every single game because the rest of the team is laying a nice baseline. Does that feel the same to you, or am I just being stupid?
Yeah, I mean, except for the game that Anthony Davis misses, but yeah. If they have Davis and Holiday, basically they either need one sub to play his peak game, like Ian Clark has given us a couple times, mm-hmm. or they need two role players that give you very good games. And then if they get three or four, they're going to win against almost anybody. So, yeah, no, I feel the exact same way, and I wish that Mirotić was more in that we know what we're getting from him night in and night out, because that would make it so much easier. But, yeah, they are there right now, and some days it's Clark, some days it's Miller, some days it's Rondo, Mirotić, Moore, whatever. If two of those guys give you a good game, you could beat anybody. So, yeah, you know what you're getting from Drew and Davis for the most part.
Okay. You brought up Mirotić. I know on Twitter you've been blasting him fairly frequently recently. And to be honest, if you take the time and you looked at the Chicago Bulls fans after the trade happened and what they said about Mirotić, almost all of them who weren't like just rabidly for or against him because they're stupid like that, most of them complained about they were fine with him leaving because he was not consistent. So how do you solve that issue? Because we're seeing the same thing. He's not consistent. Is he like they seem to be trying to use him like in a modified Ryan Anderson role on offense, and like he's better at defense. I don't even want to talk about that. Just they're trying to use him as a modified Ryan Anderson on offense. But Ryan Anderson actually has some wiggle to his game when he catches the ball in the post or moves towards the basket. I don't know if Mirotić has that. Do you think Mirotić has the off-the-dribble game you need to be if they're going to sometimes just throw the ball to you and ask you to create?
I think he has off-the-dribble finish at the rim. I don't love his off-the-dribble and then back in fadeaway, one leg, wannabe Dirk garbage. But yeah, I mean, we saw it a little bit in the Boston game where he could pump fake or fake handoff and then go around the guy and get to the rim and lay it up. But honestly, like, that his shot form is what makes him inconsistent. He brings it down way too far, and then sometimes, I mean, I always know when he's going to miss because there's this little hitch at the top of his shot right before when he's missing. So I don't know what you do about that. I like that he likes to take them, but I wish he was a little smarter. Like what he did in the Boston game, I think he had a sequence that completely changed the game where he pump faked, got a guy in the air, and what he's been doing all year is dribbling around that guy and then taking a 20-foot jumper and missing. But this time he went right into the guy, got three free throws. Then he saw the ball go through the hoop. Next time down the court, drained a three. And, you know, he has that kind of potential. I just think he's inconsistent because he forces things that aren't there way too much. And I think that might work better against reserves. And I think that's why he was playing well for Chicago, coming off the bench in a particular role. And I think the hope's got to be that next year with a full training camp, plus with him basically being a reserve full-time once Boogie gets back, that he could be more consistent. But I don't think you're going to get the consistency out of him if he's starting and playing big minutes.
Defensively, is he good? Is he average?
I would say he is above average for a guy who is known for his offense. So by that, I mean that, like, is he as good as a guy like John Henson? No, but John Henson gives you nothing on the other end. So for a guy who can play on the offensive end, he's better than most of those guys. So he's better than defensive. He's better than average for non-defensive specialists.
Okay.
So
well, that's good. Like, yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think of who I would compare him to, and not if it was just another white guy, because that's the lazy thing to do. But, like, even in Pelicans, like, he's better than David West ever was.
Is he one of the Morris brothers?
I think he's smarter. But, like, yeah, for people listening to this who are Hornets Pelicans fans, he is better than David West ever was. He's better than Jamal McGlure was. Yeah, I mean, he's an above average, in my opinion, big man defender, if you get rid of all the guys who are just specialists okay. on that end. So, yeah.
I can't believe you're talking bad about McGlure.
Mm.
So McGlure is like one of like my, for a couple of years, he was one of my favorite guys on the team. Just because he's kind of nasty. Like, there was times where he just wanted to hurt people, and it was obvious. But I don't think I've seen a guy fall out. Like, the year that they were, you know, terrible and feeding him the ball, it seemed like he could be a decent starter in the league for a long time, and 2 years later, he was essentially done. It was weird.
You want to know something that'll get you really upset?
Sure.
They had a trade lined up where they basically could have swapped him for the draft rights to Danny Granger straight up, and then they turned it down.
Oh, God.
When Danny Granger started to plummet, I forget what team it was, but it was like in the 13, 14, 15 range.
Yeah, and I remember that too.
Yeah, and they offered him the pick for McGlure with the Hornets, you know, would have taken Danny Granger and yeah, so it could have been a Danny Granger CP3 Foundation, and yeah, they kept McGlure. So there you go,
big cat. All right, okay. So that was the game that you liked, that left you with the most warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah,
what was the game that you left most disgusted by it?
I hate watching the Rockets. I hate it. Like, I don't even care if they're playing my favorite team or not, if my favorite team beats them, like, I hate watching that team. I don't know how anybody could objectively enjoy it. And, you know, I have a lot of thoughts about it. Like, I don't blame James Harden at all. You know, find out what the rules are and then exploit them. I am totally cool with that. It's then the league and the refs' job to figure that out. I guess my question is, like, is James Harden so unique? Why don't more people do what he's doing? Like, can they not? That's the part I don't understand, is, like, Gentry and all, you know, he says, he bitches that we play the right way and yada yada. But, like, if Drew Holiday, if you put a gun to his head and said, you know, I want you to draw six free throws a game and then he went and just tried to do what Harden was doing. Like, can other people not do it? Does Harden have a special skill, or is Harden just willing to do it and other guys aren't? That's my biggest question.
So I would say this about Harden. He always comes off as kind of just almost a lumbering guard, like, if that makes sense. Like, he's not amazingly explosive. He's not quick. He's not cat fast. But he does have a really kind of unique blend of power with agility, and his handle is pretty good. I think that if other players tried to do it, they could draw a few of the types of fouls that he draws. But I think that when he gets into the paint, there's so much power in him that even, like, a lot of the guards and people he's matched up with, they just can't handle him, and they end up fouling just because he hits them way harder than they expect or can do anything with. But
I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the swing through bullshit. You know, when he goes around a pick and a guy's reaching through, he just throws the crap up. Like, can other people not do that? Like, they know he does it. Why don't other people copy that?
Well, I think, and this is just me talking, I think players are so terrified of James Harden getting free that they tend to stick to him much more aggressively than they do a lot of other players. Like, no one is going to follow Drew around a pick at the same intensity or terror that James, they're going to try to chase James Harden. And they're not going to be putting defensive specialists on Drew, whose entire life is chase this guy and make his life misery. You're going to do that with James Harden. So Harden has developed the ability to, hey, I know this guy's going to be pressuring me, over-pressuring me at an intense level. I'm going to torture him on it. But I do believe there are, you know, other people probably could do a little bit more of what he's doing out there.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. I think that the Pelicans could somewhat compete with the Rockets in a playoff series, like, not win, but maybe win a game and then three of the four losses are single digits. But I would almost rather get blown out by Golden State or lose to something. Like, I don't want to watch Houston Rockets basketball games. They're not enjoyable.
I think a common thread throughout Twitter sphere is just go find whatever team is the Rockets are playing, and the opposing team's Twitter is in a rage the whole game. Like, it used to be the Clippers were kind of that way, but now it's like they took the most nasty, crappiest part of the Clippers, Chris Paul, and put him on the Rockets. And so now there's just, like, so much just unpleasant trickery nastiness going on in one place that it's hard to stomach it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the last team I felt this about was, like, the early to mid-2000s Spurs. Like, they used to bend the rules. Yeah, I mean, Bowen... And then they would flop all the time and everything. And then, you know, Vlade did this too with the Kings. Like, it was an epidemic. And then eventually the league did some things to help it. But I don't really blame the Rockets. They've found the holes and they're exploiting them. I can't stand watching those games. So, that was the game that disgusted me most. Even though the Pelicans stayed in it much longer than I thought they would, I can't watch Rockets games. Like, I know that Golden State will just absolutely destroy us, but I'd almost rather see a Warriors series just because I can't watch four or five games against the Rockets.
Yeah, I also say that I think it's becoming more and more apparent that the coaching staff thinks the same way that you do about Rondo, and that certain matchups he's completely useless in. I think that's why we saw him sit for Houston. Like, just, he didn't have a prayer in checking Paul or Harden, and they were going to hunt Rondo just because that's what That's what Houston does. They hunt the smallest guy on the floor nonstop all game long, trying to get that person on Harden. And Rondo would have been virtually unplayable, so they just said, we'll rest him. Do you think what happened, or do you think Rondo was tired and needed rest?
I think it was a combination of the two, but, like, saying that about Houston, like, is there anybody that you could see the Pelicans realistically playing then that Rondo isn't a terrible matchup? Like, what would be, if you just want Rondo to look as good as possible on both ends, who are you hoping the Pelicans play in the first round?
So you're talking playoff-wise?
Yeah.
That's one of the problems, is Rondo is a perfectly usable starter in the regular season when you're playing the width and breadth of the league. But when you chop off half the crappy teams and all you're doing is going against the tough guys, like, there aren't – you go down the Western Conference and he's not going to check any of the guards except for maybe against San Antonio. He could be playable, but not super well. He wouldn't be amazing. I guess Minnesota, I'm not that worried about Teague. So I guess Minnesota maybe. But Portland, Lillard and McCollum are going to roast him. Westbrook, like, please. I guess you could hide him against, some. If they don't go big, you could hide him a little bit against OKC. The Jazz are going to torch him. So.
Yeah, I don't know.
But he can take Steph Curry. We'll just take the Golden State Warriors. Set that dude down.
The Warriors would be the worst because I think they would switch him on Clay and KD all game, and he's just way too small. In some ways, I actually think the Rockets is the best matchup of the three just because nobody's really going to check Harden anyway, and I'm not terrified of him on Paul. I'm not... I think you'd probably try to start off hiding him on Ariza, and I don't care if Ariza shoots over him all game. So I don't know what you do. I don't think he's great in any matchup, but, there is the legacy of Rondo.
But Houston is even, like, they are the most aggressive they're the most aggressive switch seekers in the entire league. Like, they'd say, who is the guy that Harden could destroy the most? And whoever that guy is guarding, they run that guy over to set the pick for him, and then they force a switch every time they can. And so that's what makes Houston so deadly. There's very few people who can manage, who has five people who can make Harden even think about working hard offensively. So.
Yeah, then maybe I just hedge hard, and then... until the guy eventually gets back on Harden, and, if you'd live with a bunch of Ariza open threes, then so be it. I don't know, but it's going to be interesting because I don't think there is a good playoff Rondo matchup out there. And then what do you do if he just turns into, the point guard version of what Ashik was for the Pelicans against the Warriors in the playoffs? Like, all of the off-the-court stuff and... everything that he brings you, and as much as he's helped you in the regular season, like, what do you do this summer if it's just obvious you can't play him in the playoffs? That's what I'm interested in seeing.
Yeah. Okay, we started talking about the Western Conference playoff teams. Let's get our monthly update. Which of the teams that are currently the 1 through 8 in the playoffs, right now Nuggets and Clippers are out, and I think both you and I feel like that might be the end result of the season. So if you had to pick one, and you could pick anyone, just anyone, doesn't matter. Don't have to worry about reasonable matchups. Which of the seven other teams do you want most?
I guess I would take Minnesota just because they haven't been there and you don't know what Jimmy Butler is going to be when he comes back. So, I would take Minnesota to me. They're somewhat beatable. I think the nightmare matchups are obviously Houston, Golden State, and I even think the Jazz in some ways are a nightmare matchup. Like, I could see the Jazz sweeping the Pelicans. So those are my three worst. And then I think Minnesota, you might have a 45% chance of winning that series. Portland, 35-40. San Antonio, 20-25. OKC, you know, 25-30. So all of those, you have some kind of a chance.
I would take the I would say without any, like, hesitation that the Utah Jazz, provided Gobert is healthy, are clearly the third best team in the Western Conference.
Yes.
I don't think there's any, like, I would take them in any series against any team in the Western Conference that's not the Warriors or the Rockets. And I would expect them playing the Warriors and the Rockets, they're going to dirty it up and make it ugly, and they're going to lose, but they're going to make the other teams feel really bad while they're doing it, because they're going to just beat them up. So if I were either Houston or Golden State, I'd be, you know, hoping that they don't end up in my end of the bracket for the second round.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, they're the ones that I want.
So, and I said this something similar to this last time, that I thought they would even miss the playoffs. Why do I look down on the OKC Thunder so much? Why am I just not worried about them and not concerned and feel like they're just not a threat? Like right now, today, I would tell you, give me the Thunder all day, every day for the playoffs, and I'd be happy.
Probably because they've underperformed other people's expectations, as opposed to you're just judging them against nothing. Like, you already have a something in their mind of what, in your mind of what they should be, or what other people said they would have been. And that since they're underperforming that, they don't scare you, where a team that's overperforming is scarier. Like, if you have an overperforming 86 versus an underperforming 86, the overperforming 86 will always garner more respect and fear from you.
Yeah.
So I think that's why.
Yeah.
So.
Because it's weird, because every time I realize I'm thinking, let's take OKC, I just stop, I think about their team, and, like, Russell Westbrook is a terror. He plays hard every minute of every game. Jrue Holiday can stick with him, but he's not slowing him down significantly. Paul George, there is nobody on the Pelicans who can make Paul George even work a little bit. Like, it's just... he is going to run wild against this team. Steven Adams is exactly the kind of guy who's just going to make Anthony Davis's life miserable, and at least in one game in the series, make Davis float out to the three-point line and just not want to be in the paint with that dude anymore. And Carmelo Anthony is primed to have one big game in every playoff series just to remind you that he can still make shots sometimes. That should be a recipe of destruction for the Pelicans. But every time I look at them, I'm just like, yeah, I'll take those guys. It's bizarre.
I think they're just a team that's not quite the sum of their part. Like, I have often thought, if they just didn't do the Melo trade, you know, and either kept those guys or moved those guys for other low usage pieces, like, they would be so much better. I think you hope that Melo has a big game one in a game they would have won anyway, and then that gets his confidence up and he starts jacking the rest of the series and loses the game for them. But yeah, I mean, the Pelicans have played them, you know, have basically dominated them this year, and they get one more game against them in the next couple of weeks, so I'm curious to see how that turns out.
Okay. Just because I made the rule out, so you're supposed to talk about the worst and best two games.
Yeah,
were there any other games you wanted to mention, or are you good?
I mean, I loved what AD did in that Clippers game.
Yeah.
End of the game, like, the game slipping away, it totally looks like a game that the Clippers are just going to take and the Pelicans' win streak is over. And yeah, eight games was nice, good for them. Then AD just goes, nah, scores six straight points, including an impossible fadeaway. And like that game was just the game where he was like, no, I am deserving of this MVP talk. So that one, even though it was frustrating to watch them blow a lead, watching AD just determined to say, I'm the best player on the court and we're going to win this game, I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seems to be a pattern for the Pelicans. I 100%, every single time the Pelicans are leading by 10 or more at halftime, I am certain it will be a close game at the end of the game at this point, every time. Like, do you feel comfortable with any lead at halftime for this team?
No, but I've finally moved on from looking at this league as a team at a lead this time. Like, to me, it's just who won the game at the end. Like, a 15-point lead now is like a 4 or 6-point lead when I was growing up watching early 90s basketball. And you never, you know, would go, man, we had a 6-point lead at the end of the second quarter and we blew it. Like, a 15 to even 20-point lead nowadays is, you know, to me, absolutely none. I don't look at it as blowing a lead or coming back from down 18. I just look at that as that was 1 point of the game. And I don't really view it that way anymore because it's just absurd, the swings and the amount of scoring and shooting. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still got to say my mindset is still, if you got a 15-point lead, if it goes away at some point, it still burns me a little bit. Like, 15 feels like it should be safe, damn it.
Yeah, I mean, what's the score of this Miami-Denver game tonight? They're in the 130s now.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, really, 15 points at any, these teams could score that in no time. So,
yeah.
I think it hurts more because you get your expectations up for the win. But, you know, conversely, I think this team could come back from down 15 or 20 to anybody too. If it only worked one way, I guess it would be frustrating, but I saw this team have monster comebacks against the Bucks and the Spurs or whatever. So it works both ways.
Okay. All right. So next we got to talk about the games that are coming up. Then it's, this is the Slaughterer's Row that we are kind of worried about already in March before, we inserted the Indiana Pacers team in the middle of it. I guess the teams aren't scary, but just the pace and the frequency of games through the end of March is pretty dramatic. But this week, there is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday games. At home versus Dallas, Indiana, and the Los Angeles Lakers. And on the road against Houston. Which of these two games... I don't want to talk about Houston. Let's not talk about Houston. Dallas, Indiana, or LA? Which ones do you want to talk about?
I mean, to me, the most interesting one is the LA one at the end of a back-to-back-to-back. Like,
Yeah. You
look at the records, you look what the teams have to play for, and it's at New Orleans. Like, normally, in most other situations, you pencil this in as a W and you move on, but because of the rare situation that this is the third game in three nights, it's the fourth and five, like that's a game that you just, it feels like it's a game that you could lose, that you would win if not for this stupid roof leak. So that's the one that's the most interesting to me.
Okay. So they play two tough games, or, you know, I don't know, is Dallas a tough game anymore? It used to feel like even if they were a you know, downtrodden team, they at least would play you tough and make you work, and it feels like Dallas doesn't do that this year anymore. Like, it feels like they're in the bottom of the league, and they're not fighting that hard about it. You agree with that?
I think Dallas is a team that if you let them stay in it, they're going to be dangerous at the end of the game and could win. But if you put your foot on their throat, they'll happily go away and play some young guys and, you know, let you get your win. So that's the thing with Dallas. Like, if you let them hang around, they will beat you at the end, but they are looking for a reason to play young guys and tank, but not make it look like it's tanking. So go get yourself a lead and put it away in the third quarter, because they'll be more than happy to give you that victory.
Yeah. And I'll actually be in Dallas. Too bad it's not in Dallas, but I'll be in Dallas, so maybe I can catch it at a bar at my hotel tomorrow. but the Dallas game, like, if there's any game this week that they should just try to bank a win, this is it. Like, I don't think any of the other games are going to be easy compared to this one. So bank the win against Dallas so that you can move on and fight your way and scratch and claw and hopefully snag another win, or luckily, you know, two the rest of the way through. Indiana.
Let me ask you this. Let's say you win versus Dallas. Now I come to you and I'm the devil or whoever, and I tell you that rest your main players against Indiana, and I will guarantee you a win against the Lakers. Would you take that deal, or would you press and try to win both?
I would take that deal.
So you'd be happy with 2-3 here at home, even though it's against three teams that you could argue that are worse than the Pelicans, all at home. You would happily take 2-3.
I would do that because they still have to play Houston on Saturday.
Oh, I'm playing against Houston.
I want to go out and punch Houston just because they pissed me off in the last game.
See, what I'm telling my players is, you go get me three victories. I'm going to play you hard these next three games, and you're not even making the flight to Houston. Like, I'll send Charles Cook, Larry Drew, like a couple of those guys, and they're going to play. God damn it, the Heat missed two easy looks, one at the end of regulation, one at the end of overtime. Could have beaten Denver tonight. I freaking hate this team. I'm not playing that Houston game at all.
Okay.
If AD's playing, maybe I play him 10 to 12 minutes just so the league doesn't find me. Same with Drew. Same with Rondo. But my main guys are not playing in that Houston game. So I'm looking at these three as winnable, and I'm going to ask the guys if they could just give me everything, go win these three games, and then we're taking Friday off. Saturday, we're going to treat like it's a preseason game. Sunday, light practice. And then the rest of the, if you basically look at that Houston game as an off day, really the schedule isn't that tough.
Right.
They don't play again until what, Tuesday against Portland?
Yep.
So
yeah, a little break.
That's how I would treat it, honestly.
Well, I agree with you 100%. That's what they should do. I don't think they're going to just give up on the Houston game. So, yeah. Okay. The Indiana Pacers. What do you know about them? They are one of those teams that sit in the Eastern Conference. They're playing surprisingly well for what was expected of them. Why are they as good as they are? Is it purely Victor Oladipo has turned into what I thought he would turn into when I absolutely loved him? I'm going to blow this up because I thought Oladipo was amazing and I loved him in the draft. and it happens so rarely that I'm correct about anything in the draft, because I rode the MKG train like crazy too for a while. So Victor Oladipo, is he as amazing as I knew he would be, and that's all? Or are there other reasons why this team's good?
First of all, I hate saying this, and this always sounds lazy, but they're in the East. We just saw a Boston team that's supposed to be great, and yeah, I know they're hurt, but that same Boston team just took Washington to double OT the other night.
Before you talk Indiana, if the Pelicans were in the East with all the same injuries and everything, if they were in the East, where do you think they would be standing right now? What seed?
I think if I think if every team had full roster, I don't know, because I don't know how hard they would play during the regular season, but if every team had full rosters completely healthy, I think 5 or 6 teams from the West would win the Eastern Conference.
Okay. I think Toronto's pretty good, but other than that, I agree 100%.
I don't think Boston would sniff the second round in the West, like wouldn't even come close. So, like, I would put Boston right around with the Clippers, to be honest.
Okay.
So, anyway, Indiana's, I mean, yeah, they have Oladipo, but really, they just don't kill themselves, and then they have, how we were kind of talking about, those random contributions. Like, I saw the other night, Collison and Al Jefferson both had like 20 something off the bench. So they just get those random contributions.
And I'll be honest, I didn't know Al Jefferson was still in the league. I thought he'd retired.
Yeah. I mean, he just had a big game against, God, I forget which game it was, Toronto or Philly or one at Washington, one of those games. But yeah, he just had a monster game. So, They play solid defense. Offensively, you've got to worry about Oladipo, but then you also have just the random guys here or there that give them just enough. But they're not a dominant team, but they're not going to beat themselves. They're in every game, and then eventually they'll do just enough to win. I mean, what they do tonight against the Lakers. Tonight their random guy, for instance, was Lance Stephenson, who puts up 16 off the bench, and Thaddeus Young goes 9 of 12 for 18 points. So, you know, you look up and down their roster, and there's nobody great, but Oladipo's going to give you what he does every night, and then two random guys are going to pop off, and they'll do enough to win.
Yeah, and Sabonis has been surprisingly good. Wait, no. Actually, I think in that draft, too, I said I really like Sabonis. So I'm really nailing these Pacer guys. Like, I'm pretty good.
You really are. Yes, Ryan is nailing these Pacer guys. Remember that.
I knew as soon as I said it.
Well, you outed yourself. Yeah, so, I mean, it's just so interesting. Like, all three of those games happen in a vacuum with a normal amount of rest. Like, the Pelicans are the favorite in all three games. Heavy favorite against Dallas. Pretty good favorite against the Lakers. And then a favorite against Indiana. So, like, if that would have happened in a normal sequence, then those are three games that you're looking at putting W's up. And instead, they just get this weird situation, and now you're probably happy with 2 of 3, although I'll be honest, like, I'm going to go into every one of those games not caring about the circumstances and thinking the Pelicans should win. So my hope is that they win those three, and then seriously, I treat that Houston game like an exhibition. I start my guys, I give them a little run here and there in each quarter, but I'm really playing my reserves and my deep bench guys a ton of, basically what we saw happen in that Washington game. Once the Pelicans knew they were out of it and AD wasn't playing, like, I think Drew got what, like 22 minutes in that game. And that's exactly what I would do. And then you just start again with the Blazers after that.
All right. Here's my real question for you. This is the taking Mike's temperature about Mirotić.
In my mouth.
About Mirotić, wherever you like to. So, you on Twitter, you've been killing Mirotić in games.
I've been killing him. I'm just saying what I see.
You've been killing him.
I just say what I see. When a guy plays good, I say he's playing good. When a guy plays bad, I say he's playing bad.
You've been killing him. So Mirotić, any chance he goes off and has a really big game against two teams in this four-game stand?
Oh, I mean, any chance, yeah. There's always a chance. I'd say every game that he goes into, there's 20-25% chance.
Okay, so let me change. Is it 50% chance, less or greater than, that he'll have
He will have
big offensive games.
He will have big games again. I won't even say chance. I will say he will have two big games against Dallas and the Lakers.
Okay.
No doubt. But those aren't the games I need him having. I need him against Indiana. I need him against Portland. I need him against the Cavs. Like, that's great that he could play these crap teams or teams that don't play any defense. Like, I need him in the games against the teams where, you know, the Pelicans have a good shot of losing. So,
all right, they're going 2-2 this week. What do you got?
I'm going 3-1. I think they just go crazy at home. They win three home games, and then I think pride and the winning streak will make them try to play against Houston, but I just hope they take my advice and treat that like an exhibition game. So I say 3-1 with the loss at Houston, and yeah, I wouldn't be terrible.
Okay. Got anything else to talk about?
That is it. Ryan's going to Dallas. If any of you guys live out there, buy him a soda. And yeah.
I'm going to Vegas,
so maybe I'll see one of you guys out there in Vegas.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know.